You're connected to WebTalk at WebTalkRadio.com for the week of March 12, 2005. And my name is Rob Greenlee, and thank you for listening to the show from around the world. And we keep you plugged into the latest net trends and some very cool connected guests on the show, don't we, Dana?
Well, I think we should take exception with the word trends. We've been using trends for a long time now.
Well, there's continuing to be trends, right?
Well, yeah, I know, but maybe we could think of a more of a 21st century term. Evolving synergies of interestingness.
Okay. Nice work.
Well,
I'm
here, but also we're joined by Peter. Peter's in the studio.
Yo, Peter.
What's up, Dana? What's
Peter
up,
York.
Rob?
What's up?
Peter York is the creator of downloadradio.org, and he's also at peteryork.net, correct?
Yeah, I got a few sites.
Yeah, you do. Well, and a blog. That's right. And a blog. So you posted that occasionally, right?
I'm a pretty connected fella.
He's
you
also
are.
A Seattle filmmaker. He also was, back in the 90s, big on with Exodus and
Boeing.
And Boeing.
Oh, yeah.
Really on the cutting edge.
Streaming man. But now he's download man.
And now I'm download. Streaming is for, you know.
Weenies.
It's very passe. It's very 20th century.
Streaming is for weenies? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm a big streamer.
I know you are.
So I must be a weenie, right?
I'm not touching.
No.
Don't
call
Rob a weenie. He towers over all of us.
Okay.
Rob, we're going to have some good guests coming up. Why don't you quickly run down?
Well, yeah, we just wanted to run down some of the cool people that were going to be joining us on our show now that we're doing kind of a two-day-a-week show, or two shows a week is probably a better way of saying it. We're going to have Dan Gilmore on, who's formerly a journalist for the San Jose Mercury News, and he actually is now an author of We the Media, and he's actually started up a company all about grassroots journalism. So he's going to come on and talk about that. And then we're also going to have Karen Howe, who's been on the show before.
Oh, my favorite girl.
Yeah, she's great. She's a general manager of AOL and SingingFish.com, which actually was started up here in Seattle, and they're like a multimedia search engine, so we're going to get an update.
She's an executive vice president at AOL.
I know.
She's EVP, baby.
Highfalutin.
And we
there.
Knew her when she was just a CEO.
That's right. She was just getting something off the ground, yeah. Actually, I think she did, we did one of the very first interviews with her for Singing Fish.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
2 or 3 years ago.
And then when we were coming back from Comdex a few years ago, we ran to it in the airport.
Yeah,
and we
actually
were all kind of like falling over. We were really tired because it had snowed and yep. The planes were delayed, and that was good.
No, she's a very capable executive.
Yeah, she is.
AOL's lucky to have her.
Yes, they are. Let's see if they can hang on to her, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. The other really cool guest we're going to have on is Don Katz, who's the founder and CEO of Audible.com. And I'm going to actually have him come on the show to talk about how he thinks podcasting is going to impact this company.
Don Katz, didn't he? He was either a writer or one of the editors of Rolling Stone.
Yeah, I think he was.
That's cool.
He is cool.
I'm
cool
actually
dude.
More impressed with that than Audible.
And we're also lastly here, and over the next few weeks, we're going to have Maria Thomas, who's the VP of Online Operations for NPR.org.
Yeah, Maria's awesome. She used to be number two over at Amazon and then went
really?
Over. Yeah, she was Jeff Bezos' right arm.
Oh.
And now she's over at NPR. I guess she's been there for about 2 or 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
She's doing a great job over there.
So we're going to have a really star-studded lineup here over the next few weeks.
Everybody we've talked about what they used to do, too.
Well, we know them so well.
It's like
they're part of
the
Web Talk family here.
We have a lot of news to talk about. We're going to, three of us, just jabber for the next 15 minutes. Some of the topics we're going to cover, Peter?
Price is the biggest benefit for getting telco-based IPTV.
Okay, is that VoIP boom thing happening now? Well, the big boys are all wanting in on it, but who's MIA?
We're going to find out. St. Helens blows in our backyard here at the Web Talk Radio Studio. We can actually just look out our back window and we can see it blowing all over the place. And we're going to talk about some cool online photos and some places to go that you can find out all about it.
And if you've been following our website editor application poll, we'll tell you who's winning.
And we're also going to talk about some listener emails. Jeff writes us about our Napster of Television segment, and I think we'll have actually two emails.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about television delivered over the, internet and by the phone companies. Right?
Well, yeah, there's basically some significant things going on with telco companies out there offering IPTV services. And I think this is a significant trend. There's that's been going on for a while now. We really haven't seen too much of it deployed yet, but
so telephone companies providing what cable and broadcast stations have been doing, is that right?
Correct.
Because they're tired of their piece of the pie getting taken away from internet sources, you know, long distance.
Well, they want to get a cut of this this action, because if they can keep their customers from moving over to like a cable television provider that's offering the digital phone and all the services that somebody might want to have off of a connection coming into a home, then they're going to keep that revenue coming in.
I think the important thing to remember, though, is that they're really talking about the delivery of digital television via ADSL, VDSL, or fiber to the home.
VDSL? What is that? I've never heard of that one.
It's another flavor of
ADSL.
Digital subscription line?
No, it's another
virtual.
It's another
digital
protocol.
Subscription line. That's right.
But here's the biggest problem.
Sounds like a sexually transmitted disease.
It may be.
I'm not so happy we're not on regular radio now, so we can talk about sex, even if it's a disease.
VDSL.
I was going to say that I think that the telcos have a unique opportunity, but they also have a unique challenge, and that is that there are distance limitations to the DSL technology. You need to be less than 12,000 feet from what's known as a central office, right? That's where the other end of your wire on your telephone goes to.
But I thought they were all going to lay fiber optic networks to make this happen.
Yeah.
That's the plan anyway, right?
Out here at the WebTalk studio, have they laid any fiber in front of your house yet?
I actually do have fiber, but it actually comes from our power company of all places.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Click Networks
that municipal ISP. That
correct.
Have you been following that story about the municipal ISPs getting all beat up by the telcos?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I know, so. I know. Well, they're stealing away market share from them.
I'm impressed that you got fiber out in front of your home, so you can get like gigs to your house now.
Yeah, they're not offering it yet.
They're not offering it yet.
It's just another one of those dark fiber situations.
Oh, okay. So you got some dead fiber in the ground. Oh, cool.
future expansion. Right?
Nice.
Yeah. So anyway, there's actually Bell South, SBC, and Verizon are, like we just talked about, are looking at laying fiber for, you know, digital television and all this stuff.
Hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see how that rolls out over time. And actually over in Hong Kong and Japan, they've been actually doing TV over DSL for quite a while now. And they've got, what, hundreds of subscribers over there. Hundreds of thousands of subscribers.
You know, I guess this is kind of what you're talking about. Haven't we been seeing some digital TV, HDTV signals, like when we download something from the internet? And it looks great.
You download stuff from the internet?
And I was just kind of reading the stats that came out from Instat, MDR, mm-hmm. that in 2008, our HDTVs or our digital televisions will be around $600 and some dollars. That's good, because I don't want to pay my $3,000 right now. But I have to wait 4 years.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a flat screen. I think you're thinking of these giant plasma LCD screens.
Oh,
but the plasmas right now, I mean, they've come down in price. I remember, gosh, I did a trade show back in '96 in Paris, and I think we had like 17 of them of the 42 inch models, and they were like $15,000 each. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think they're down to like $3,500 now.
Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, so compared to, you know, 15K a pop, I know this is...
There's a term for that. You know, it's just like the deceleration of prices, the acceleration of technology. I don't know. There's some like...
There is some formula. It's not Moore's Law. It's something else.
Oh, right? Okay.
Well, but it's a similar thing to Moore's Law. But it seems like a lot of these TV manufacturers, the digital TV or the plasma screens or whatever, they're coming out with bigger is better. You know, I think that the last one I heard, I think it was Samsung, came out with a 82-inch or 84-inch that they're going to start selling.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, when I was at the Consumer Electronics Show 2 years ago, we got to see the 70-inch. And hopefully they've solved this problem, but I know that you couldn't get closer than 6 inches to it. If you got any closer, it was radiating enough heat that it was probably 100-plus degrees, and it actually could burn skin.
6 inches from your big...
Can you imagine what it actually did to the cells or the genetics of your body,
think
right?
I about that, yeah. But I'm just thinking about, you know, getting a sunburn.
Well, you know, easy trade when you're talking about entertainment and must-see TV, man.
By 2008, we should see about 14 million subscribers to digital telco TV, just in the U.S. here. And about 75 million households are going to have it ultimately here, it sounds like, in the next, I don't know, 10 or 15 years.
You know, and I think it really it's just going to depend on these price points, right? I mean, I think, you know, $50 to $60 a month for television programming is too much. And we've talked about this before. But, you know, it's the bundling that that all of these guys are looking at, right? They're going to look at and say, you know, it's not just the television. It's the television plus the internet services plus the other, you know, in this case, the VOD services that are available.
They're mainly doing it as a competitive thing to keep from losing customers, I would think.
Absolutely.
So
this is an interesting stat. It's kind of unrelated, but it's also from Instat. 60% of Americans browse the internet while watching television. Well, I do that because my television's on my computer screen, but
I do it downstairs in our living room with my laptop. I have my laptop in my lap, and I look right over my 15-inch flat screen and watch TV and then look at my monitor at the same time.
I guess I didn't even realize 60% of Americans like regularly even use the internet. I mean, maybe I'm totally off on that, but that's amazing.
Now, here's a completely unrelated statistics from this report. It says that 30% of people hate cell phones, 25% hate their alarm clock, and 23% actually hate their television, which I think goes back to the, you know, what we've really been talking about is it isn't just the delivery. I mean, I applaud the telcos for doing this.
But 75% love their computer, right?
Right.
There's a fine line between passion and hate.
Well, but my point is that, you know, if 23% of people hate television, it goes back to what we've been talking about all along is it isn't all this great new technology or these great new delivery options, be it HGTV or internet delivery or now through the telcos, it's that there's nothing to watch on television.
Well, and there's Alias.
Right, but
24.
But you're not,
24.
But you're not paying for what you use, right?
That's
you're not
true.
Paying just for Boston Legal. You're paying, you know, you're paying for the other 89% that you don't watch.
Yeah.
Why?
Can't spend enough time.
I know I'm paying for it, I guess, in my watching of commercials. That's right. No, I'm paying for it because I'm paying to have cable into my house to offer all these channels that I don't watch, essentially.
You watch as much as you need to watch. If you watched any more, you wouldn't get work done.
We also subscribe to HBO, but we don't watch HBO very often. I think the only time we actually watch any HBO content is on the on-demand area.
Yeah.
So. Well, which is interesting when you think about it.
Let's jump back into the VoIP ocean and just talk about a couple of big internet companies that are also going to be offering that, and that would be AOL. They just announced last week, actually, that they're going to jump into that.
Voice over IP services? Yeah. A lot of these companies have been doing this for a year or more, probably. And there's rumors about Google jumping into a voice over IP service, too. I'm not quite sure how they're going to deploy that. But do you have any speculation, Peter, on how Google might jump into voice over IP services?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, I would imagine it would probably be something, you know, along the lines of Gmail or maybe even a partnership, for example, with a Skype. I mean, I'm just speculating at this point.
Well, you just buy Skype, right?
Or just buy Skype, right.
Why exactly do they think – okay, just because a team of Google honchos, as it says here – attended a what is that? They attended a conference about
it's the Vaughn conference,
Spring Voice on the Net conference,
right?
Yeah, that's
and
one
so that's
too.
What got them all excited because nine guys showed up at a conference from Google.
Mm-hmm.
Were senior executives. I mean, they weren't necessarily. Okay. You know, it wasn't like seven engineers. Oh, and Sergey.
it's not significant at all.
No.
Sergey wasn't there.
But who knows?
They said they were fairly aggressive about getting our opinions. That's one of the VoIP executive type people were saying.
Right.
Aggressive is like beating them up. Talk to me. We have ways.
You know what? Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, it's going to be a very, very crowded marketplace. And you know, the problem is when you have a crowded marketplace of service providers, what ends up happening? The prices eventually go down to, you know, the point where it's barely a business. No, but think about the telecom collapse. I mean, you know, together with the dot-com bubble bursting, I mean, the telecoms got nailed too. I mean, WorldCom, or as we've affectionately called it, WorldCon.
Yeah. Coined by, I think, Andy at the
Andy
radio.
Anderson over there, yeah. Getting way too many players in a marketplace isn't necessarily good over the long term, you know, as a viable business. So
Microsoft would agree with you.
Well, and everybody's jumping in. Yahoo's been working on it for years with their Instant Messenger and MSN. It has announced some support to it with their Microsoft Office Communicator product. It's their live communicator server. And there's also talk about them rolling it out into the MSN right. Messenger client. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing it roll out to, you know, all these big players. But like you're saying, there's going to be so many players in this that there's not going to be a lot of money to be made.
There's going to be an oversaturation of services to the number of people. And here's a perfect example. Remember Netflix, right? I mean, Netflix originally, I think they had raised their price to like $21.99. Now that we've got all these other players coming
Blockbuster, and then
the rumor is that Amazon is going to have service for around $10.99 a month. That's the rumor. But you look at this and you're like going, gosh, you know, there is not a lot of market left to have. I mean, right now there's two major ones, right? There's the AT&T CallVantage solution and Vonage, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the two sort of what we would call as the incumbents right now.
Yeah.
There's probably enough room for maybe two, maybe one more, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I guess it really remains to be seen who, in fact, is going to become another dominant player in this besides Vonage and AT&T.
Yeah, I think those two are the ones that are most likely at this point. But there are some missing in action here. You start looking at the Baby Bells and some of those companies. Are they going to support voice over IP? Because that goes against their whole infrastructure that they have right now to a certain extent and how they're making money.
Absolutely. And I think that the telcos and the data carriers were dealt a blow this week with Michael Pell, the FCC chairman's decision to tell the ISPs not to block the VoIP ports being used.
I can see that happening.
If you're AT&T or let's say AOL, you're an AOL broadband subscriber and you're using a Vonage phone.
Vonage is the most vulnerable in that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, of anybody.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because they're the smaller player on the block that's trying to get market share.
Yeah, and I don't.
And Skype is another vulnerable one, I would think.
Yeah, I don't know how many subscribers there are, you know, AT&T versus Vonage, but I got to tell you that I'm an AT&T CallVantage subscriber,
mm-hmm.
and you and I regularly talk on the phone. With that, and other than when I'm uploading files,
it creates
a little latency. It actually works pretty decent.
So. Well, we've decided not to do voice over IP here because we rely too much on our phone line for interviews for the show. And actually, Quest here, who actually provides our landline, came out with a long distance plan that really solved all my problems because that was one of the main reasons I wanted to get voice over IP was so I could save on long distance because we talked to people all over the country.
You wanted that all you can eat long distance.
Yeah, exactly. So for $20 a month, I basically capped my long distance. So I don't have to move to voice over IP. I mean, that's what the Baby Bells are doing to compete against the voice over IP services because people are realizing that the only real advantage to having the voice over IP service is the savings on long distance.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can undermine that by capping the traditional line fees, then they can. I think they'll be more likely to keep those people with regular landlines. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. And then also the whole 911 thing too is another factor for maintaining your existing home line.
Yeah, I think that got solved.
Yeah, I think it will too.
Ultimately, I'm not too worried about that.
Well, I won't give anything away except that we're going to talk a little bit about Mount St. Helens.
Very cool. I know this is a real high-tech subject. We'll pull some websites connections into this, but it's kind of an interesting story. Mount St. Helens, as you probably heard, blew its top this week. And,
well, that's a little bit. It didn't blow its top.
Well, it did. I mean, it shot stuff up the 36,000 feet. It
blew a bunch of ash,
bunch
and
of junk
moisture.
In the air, and steam and stuff. And
it was
pretty cool. And there's a lot of cool pictures out there. But
the crow flies. It's only about what? How many miles away?
About 90 miles away.
90 miles.
That's about 90 miles away. But there's a special connection with the web talks, you know, with the mountain.
Rob and I went on a date in the dome.
Yeah,
we did.
And you know,
hot date too. It was simmering.
I was going to say, I know you guys have actually, when there was a glacier in there, you actually were able to do a little canoodling in the glacier.
That's right.
Caves.
We could go down in the caves, right below the lava dome, which is kind of getting blown apart right now. But
yeah, you can actually see pictures. I put up, I blogged about it. If you go to our Web Talk Guys blog and then actually look at the blog roll, it's under Dana's Live Journal blog.
I guess.
Or you can click on Dana's photo blog. Go to multiply.com, yeah. Dana's photo blog, and that has a lot more pictures of us in the dome and on the summit. But I remember that one weekend we climbed to the summit on Saturday and down, and then
we
climbed into the dome. Oh, did we fly?
Well, we climbed to the summit on one day, and then we drove around and we flew in by helicopter and landed on the backside of the lava dome.
Right, and then we walked and hiked down.
Spent the whole day back there hiking around.
And we went in as a part of the International Glacial Speleological Society, the study of ice caves, and they were doing a documentary.
They were filming in there. They were making a movie.
I carried the camera.
Yes, you were.
Right on.
Camera girl.
Now, do you know what my nickname for that mountain is called?
Hmm.
I call it Mount Doom.
Mount Doom? That's a good name for it. But there's also a lot of other cool pictures online, too, you can go to. And we'll actually post a link to that. It's actually at the USGS website. If you go to vulcan.wr.usgs.gov/volcanoes, you can actually get to a page that has a bunch of pictures kind of on a daily basis of what's going on inside the crater. And it's fascinating because there's a whole new lava dome growing in there that's growing up. It's about 1,500 feet in elevation now.
I think it's pretty cool because it looks like a humpback whale.
It does.
That's very northwest of you.
It is. It's like extruding.
It's extruding a whale back out of it.
Well, let's merge ourselves back into the internet issues. We were doing a poll we did a story, I guess, on the Notepad, the lowly Microsoft Notepad.
That's not lowly.
It's cool. For websites. And so we said, why don't we just find out what are the most popular ones out there? So we've had a poll up for a couple of months.
Pull up running. We've had a couple of votes or a couple hundred of votes come in there. And Dreamweaver is leading the poll right now, and which surprised me a little bit. But Front Page is in number two position.
That's what I use.
Yep. And Notepad obviously comes in there. We actually had like the Adobe Go Live product. We had NoteTab, Hot Dog, which is a HTML editor out of Australia.
I used that every once in a while.
Hot Dog was like from the mid-90s, that was cool. Is it still going?
And Pat Scanlon, who used to be a co-host on this show, used to work at Sausage Software, which made the Hot Dog. So
you know the one that I use that isn't on this list at all?
What's that?
HTML Kit.
Oh, I've never heard of it.
I like that one.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's pretty decent. It has lots of cool, interesting plugins. So, like, you know, if you're an HTML developer, but if you're, you know, like you're a Java guy or a JavaScript or PHP or ASP, it's got all kinds of. Think of it as kind of, you know, as like the Visual InterDev suite of tools, but with all the other, you know, protocols and tools thrown into it.
Yeah, and I think that one of the reasons that Dreamweaver is number one and so popular is because it's not Microsoft.
Oh, you think that's it?
Well, I think that's part of it, and because Microsoft has built a reputation with that Front Page for using a lot of proprietary tags, and I know Dreamweaver doesn't really use proprietary tags. They use kind of tags that can be used in basically in any browser, and that's one of the challenges I know Front Page has had over the years.
Hmm.
I think they've mitigated a lot of those problems, but you know, and you kind of have to be careful what you implement with Front Page and what you don't because of the Front Page extensions and all that kind of stuff.
Well, last time that Peter was here in the studio, we talked about the Napsterization of TV. We talked about the television industry being really worried about, you know, getting downloaded, and that was a fascinating. Wasn't that fun? You got a lot of feedback.
Yeah, we definitely got lots of feedback. I got some email, and I know you guys got a lot of email as well.
And we're going to read a couple of them too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like it.
We got an email from Jeff Jones, who was wanted to make a comment about our Napsterization of TV segment that we did. And his comment was, what we need is a new file format that comes with a header, which includes a commercial. I'm not quite sure I entirely understand what he's suggesting here, but for video and audio, it can be a silent flash presentation or
I think it's kind of like what we see
crawl.
Right now on like Feed Room or something. It's just a little 30-second commercial. It's silent.
But it's kind of
flash, a little interesting thing going on.
I think what he's saying is it needs to be embedded in the media file, I think is what do you think he's saying here, Peter?
I think so. And then he's talking about that it needs to report back to the internet and when it's viewed and
All the things we talked about. You know,
yeah, I mean,
downloading stuff.
You know, Jeff, I think these are all noble ideas and good suggestions. I'm just not entirely sure, you know, A, what the development effort would look like, and more importantly, who's going to pay for that?
Is it already happening though?
Yes and no.
I mean, they do it for, like I said, Feverun
well,
does that.
But not on downloads. And I think that's what he's really thinking about here is trying to embed an advertiser in a downloadable file and have that execute whenever you actually play the media file.
Okay. No, I really think that the file format thing is, I mean, it's an interesting idea, but I think you're probably going to see a lot more adoption of new technology into existing file formats, so be it MP3 or MPEG or Windows Media or Real Media, QuickTime file formats. I think that's probably where you're going to see some of this new technology. And it could be in the MPEG 4 and some of the other developing MPEG standards, which address some of these issues.
And one of the comments that he makes in here is about how that file could be managed. You could pay to have it unlocked, which means that it basically would eliminate that commercial if you paid for that.
Oh, sure.
Media file. I think there's something to that from the standpoint of being able to preload commercials into a download distribution, and then you either pay to have it be commercial-free or you just accept it with commercials. So I think it's an interesting idea. I don't know if it's going to get implemented, but it's a thought-provoking idea. Thank you, Jeff, for sending us the email.
We also got one from Sue Freeman. She also was listening to that discussion on television, had a few things to add to it. That was on February 19th, if you're all looking at our show for our website for past shows to listen to. She says she doesn't use TiVo or Replay TV, but one thing that really irks her, and she calls out ABC on this one, and you've seen it happen, I'm sure you have, guys, because ABC's not the only channel that does it. That's where they overlap their show by a minute or two to run over the top of this next hour, thus causing you to miss the beginning of a show on another channel. She says this happens with Lost. I've seen it happen with Desperate Housewives over Boston Legal. So.
Yeah, and apparently West Wing as well. So, no, it's definitely a problem. Well, and I think
CSI.
And I think TiVo and Replay both have this feature, but it's a feature that basically says, in effect, even I know the Prismic guys with their recorder device, which I don't know when it's coming out, but it's a feature that basically says start recording like 5 minutes before the show's scheduled time and 5 minutes afterwards. So in other words, you're getting kind of like a head and a tail.
Mm-hmm. I think this is so destructive to their viewership. I mean, sure, they're all competing for viewers, but boy, they aren't thinking about their viewers here, are they, when they do this?
No.
It's like they're just pissing people off
is
what they're doing.
Tricking.
Well, it goes back to our whole idea is that this really is the tyranny of television.
It is.
And these are all the little manipulations that the television broadcasters are doing to try and muck up these sort of new digital models.
Yeah. Well, and Sue also mentions later in the email about the fluff of press around podcasting. I think this is in response to some of the comments that we've made about that on there. And she basically doesn't blame the podcaster, but actually blames the inept and lazy journalist out there for some of the fluff in the press about podcasting. It seems like every article that comes out says almost exactly the same thing and talks about the same shows. And it's just... It's just
yeah,
so
the same websites,
yeah, exactly.
The same people,
because they all go to Wikipedia to get the knowledge.
Well, that's probably true. Probably true. So anyway, and she also made a comment that about the USA Today article that came out, and I made a comment that at the podcasting dinner, there was a lot more said about podcasting than what was covered in that article. There was no question at that event.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you heard the controversy about that. Apparently, somebody that was at the podcasting dinner didn't want it broadcast. And so, no, that was a great discussion. I wish people would have been able to hear it because, it was – I mean, you and I got a lot out of it, and it was a good, lively discussion.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't always positive about podcasting, the name podcasting.
There were
everybody liked the subject matter of podcasting and how it works and things.
Sue actually says, shame on the USA journalist that was there at that dinner for not covering that discussion more. I don't know. Do you guys see his arm getting twisted or something?
I don't know. I know that he asked a lot of questions. In fact, I know he spent an enormous amount of time with Rob picking his brain and the little – it was an interesting quote from Rob, but it certainly
didn't really encapsulate what my thoughts were.
The meat of what you were talking about.
And considering he actually covers Microsoft, I spent a lot of time talking about Microsoft in our discussion.
Right, and that didn't even make it into the article.
Well, this week I actually posted an article on the Web Talk Radio site about that whole thing about Microsoft support or lack of support for spoken word audio content, and it seems to be going away.
Oh, in writing's on the wall, I think that they are clearly going to abandon spoken content, as has Real networks. So no, I mean, even though Apple's never really done anything within the spoken word arena, I think that you know, all the majors are pretty much backing away from spoken word content.
Why is that? Because there's so much, there's a plethora of it out there that for free. Why do they have to corner? They're not going to corner any market.
I think that's part of it. But I think that the whole landscape has changed so quickly over such a short period of time that they haven't adjusted to that.
Well, yeah. People want to listen to music.
Yeah, but here's the problem. It's twofold. There's an additional glut of content with podcasters, right? Because anybody with a microphone and some production skills and some intelligent thought to speak about.
Or just want to have sex on a table and record it.
Right.
Yeah, that happens.
That happens too. It is a much more crowded landscape, but I got to tell you that it really comes back to our discussion about that the consumer wants really sort of niche programming, you know, narrow casted types of content to them, be it audio or video or whatever. And so, you know, I think by Microsoft and some of the other majors turning their back on it, they're really missing the point. And the main point is that they're kidding themselves if they don't think this is going to happen with music and with video.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
I mean, I got to tell you, all of the music that a lot of the podcasters are using, for example, from GarageBand.com, I'm starting to get introduced to a whole new set of musical artists that I wouldn't have been necessarily exposed to.
They're not part of any big label, yeah.
Yeah, or through, like, you know, for example, the Clear Channels of the world, right? If it's not on the playlist, you know, it doesn't exist stuff. So keep an eye on this, because I think you're going to see the same thing happen with music and with television. And large companies like Microsoft and other content companies are going to miss the boat on this. You're going to see a lot more of this indie developed content, independent labels for music, independent film, independent TV. And unfortunately, I don't think those companies are going to be ready to be able to embrace those. In fact, it's almost what they're really saying is that they're turning their whole back on this independently produced content.
They're all moving towards big brand name licensed content. That's what they're all positioning themselves for right now.
Right. And it's been, I mean, even Jeff in the previous letter, you know, I mean, it really goes back to this whole idea that people really want to watch, they want to listen to what they want to listen to, and they don't want to be programmed.
Yeah, exactly. For the reason that we were talking about earlier, about programming people are controlling our lives too much, or they think they can control our lives too much by overlapping content and those kind of things, and forcing us to miss the programs that we like. They're just pissing us off.
They are. We're mad as hell, and we're not going to take it
anymore. I think we spent enough on that one. What do you think?
Well, yeah, that is about all the time we have right now.
It is.
We'll have another show again in a couple of days, but that's all the time we have right now. Thanks so much for listening to us, everyone. Thank you, Peter. Tell us again where we can find you on the internet.
Everywhere.
Downloadradio.org, peteryork.net, yorksystems.com, and of course on Web Talk Radio.
And
that's
Peter
right.
is building, getting a yurt. Yurt?
Yeah,
he's going to buy land and build a yurt.
I'm going to build a yurt house,
and that's really described as a what?
It's like a wooden cloth home.
Wow!
In fact, the site, if you really want to go check them out, it's PacificYurts.com. It's a company down in Portland.
And you're going to be kind of out near the mountains, or anything?
Yeah, I'm looking at some property up in Arlington, which is about 30 minutes north of Seattle.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Cool. Would you be up by Baker or by Mount Baker?
Yeah, near Mount Baker. Yeah.
Get out in the wilderness.
So I'm going to move from one volcano to another volcano.
Yeah. Well, that volcano's not quite as active. The other one, the ones you're moving
to. The one
to.
That I'm thinking
He's
about.
But it steams a little bit.
Yeah, right.
He's going to cross that border anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get drafted, though, Peter.
No, I don't think so.
So you don't have to run to Canada.
Although, you know, I heard that they're genning up an exemption for IT professionals. In fact, the three categories of people that don't necessarily fit the age category for selective service are people with language skills, IT professionals, and medical professionals.
Really?
Yes. And so, once you pass that magic date of 26 for selective service, doesn't necessarily mean that you've sort of missed a bullet in terms of compulsory military service.
So is that the real reason why you're moving north?
No.
Okay. Well, Peter, thanks for joining us on the show again. It's great to have you in here. Hope to have you back soon.
I will.
And thank you for listening to Web Talk Radio. We're going to wrap up another show here, but come back and join us again next time we publish our podcast. So
we'll see you around the net.
Yeah.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.